On this week's Our Beer Could Be Your Life, Joe and I get to talk with Anna Keeney, graphic designer at Jack's Abbey in Springdale. We discuss her musical origin story, how she transforms music into beer labels, and our peak high school weirdness. And Joe, we got real microphones now.
That's true. We did not have real microphones when we did this.
That's true. We also have a producer, Dennis.
Yes, you do.
Who, he's going to chime in every once in a while with that beautiful baritone.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're behind the glass and you have the best voice of the three of us. Also, there's no glass. We're talking over Zoom at the moment, but
there's a lot of glass, actually.
I guess there is glass.
This is all glass, man.
Several layers of glass.
That's right. And the wires. Glass and
fiber octave cable.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking to Anna, it was super interesting. She is one of the most talented people that I know. Just like how she like connects what, you know, I hear and what she hears and what we all hear and turns it into something completely different. It's just totally fascinating.
She's also just like so genuinely sweet, which is not something as people in the punk world we always come across. Like we come across a lot of nice people, but they're not like sweet nice. They're usually like bitter, jaded, but like, yeah, I'm going to help you out. Yeah. Yeah. Fine. So it's a different, you know, point of view.
Yeah. You might even say it's refreshing in that sense. I think it's, I'm usually not one for sweet and earnest either, but she also has enough of an acerbic wit to undercut that and throw it all into relief. I think Anna is a great human being, and we got a chance to talk to her for, well, we have an hour with her, but I think we talked to her for longer than that hour, but we pulled the fine audio of our computer microphones provided by our emplaceive employee, which is also her place.
Wait, employee. You got to expense yours? Cause I did not.
Yeah. I think I owe that microphone money. not the other way around, but yeah, but now you're going to get that sweet, sweet transition between this somewhat more professional sounding operation and that slightly less professional operation of many weeks ago in the past when we were not professional podcasters.
That's where I come in.
That's right. Engineering and all,
exactly.
Baby.
Exactly. My name is Matthew Azilius. Joining me is Joe Conley. We are two beer nerds and music nerds, and we are trying to do a podcast, and it's called Our Beer Could Be Your Life, where we talk to people about music and beer and the people that enjoy them, which is a lot of people. So we're hopefully going to get to talk to a lot of people.
Broad strokes, Matt. Broad strokes.
Broad playing field here. Joining us today is graphic designer extraordinaire Anna Keeney. No R. There's no R in Keeney.
No R, despite what all of my soccer trophies say in my parents' office. All of them say Kearney, but thank you.
She has designed many a beer can for Jack's Abbey in Springdale, and they all look amazing. And she's also been designing some of our music series beers for the Springdale line. Which is a great reason to bring her in and talk to her a little bit about what inspired her to make those labels and why potentially, I mean, I'm assuming you had some of those, at least one song in there that you chose, just why you chose it. So
somewhere along the line, I think I did muscle one or two in there. So yeah, the music series has been, I'm sure Joe feels the same way, since we were both sort of there at its inception, has been a great way to incorporate, you know, all of our personal loves of music, which obviously we have so many varying different styles and so many interests, but we all are able to come together, put together this playlist, and then being able to turn these songs that we love into something physical and tangible, listening to these songs until, you know, they're ingrained in the wrinkles of your brain and then being able to translate that into something on a can. I think it's exciting for us. I think it's exciting overall as a project. And a few times there have even been, you know, people that see their cans and reach out and get excited about them. So I think that it's also, you know, that exchange there just kind of creates this really, really unique, and for me, one of the most like rewarding and exciting projects I've worked at in my time here.
Can we hear that sweet audio of you opening a can and joining us and drinking a beer? Let's get it.
How was that? It even like spritzed a little. It was everything.
We're actually all drinking the same thing, right? We all got some Lupulo from our friends in Maine. Oxbow?
I believe we are. I believe you gentlemen are actually the first people to take me to their physical space, Oxbow up in Portland.
Yeah, that was a good time. That was fun.
That was a good time.
I want to ask a music question of you, a general one. Maybe we can talk about a few things in a circle here, but I'm curious what your first like love of music was. Like, what was the first artist? Now you have to be honest with us here, because we all have embarrassing early loves, and I will definitely share one of mine. But that first spark where like, this artist is me, like they see me.
Huh. I would probably say only because my parents were very slow to pick up on technology and stuff like that. So I never had iPods. I never had CD players. I was sort of the creation of what my dad played on 105.7. So I had to, you know, anytime I was going to soccer practice or getting driven to school or anything like that, you know, that was kind of what I was given the gateway into. And so my favorite bands and the first ones that, you know, I had really gotten into, he had so many, I think he had every Aerosmith CD in his car. Mm-hmm. So Aerosmith was one of the first early loves. And then also Queen was one of the first ones that I really liked. Killer Queen would always come on in the radio, and I fell in love with that one. He would always play We Are the Champions if we won in soccer. I swear to God, he would call the radio and make sure that they played it or something. I don't know how he always had it on, but it was on when I got in the car. And that was great. And I think that was sort of, Queen especially has then translated on into, I feel like I like these, you know, like bigger, you know, like the bigger, the more creative, the more out there and experimental and strange it gets. Like, I really like that kind of stuff. And I like when people sort of like push the boundaries of, you know, what you can do in 4 minutes and 32 seconds or something as far as the song.
That's not embarrassing at all. Aerosmith.
No, it's not. But I wish I had a better, one time I phoned in and asked them to play Gavin DeGraw on Kiss 108.
That's what we're talking about here.
What was the first band that you felt was like, your finding? Like, your dad obviously introduced you to this stuff. What is that first band where you were like, this is mine? Like, when I first, like, you know, and obviously I had help, someone told me to buy a Death Cab for Cutie CD, and I listened to it, and I was like, well, I guess I'm an emo nerd for life, bye everybody, like, it's just what happened. And I felt like it very connected, like it was not on the radio, this was like my stuff. Like, what's that first band that you really felt that with?
This is probably also slightly embarrassing, pushing the emo dial maybe a couple notches. It was Fall Out Boy. Fall Out Boy was, I think that was seventh grade for me was the first album that got put on the map. I think they were just from Under the Cork Tree era. So that was your Sugar Were Going Downs. That was your, yeah. That was Dance Dance. Those were so big for me. And like, it was a full, like, I was like a very sweet girl, and that just like pushed me all the way. Like, it was the eyeliner, it was the half straightened hair, it was the hair dye, it was everything. Like, that really, but it did kind of feel like I was becoming in my own, you know, you have to get really down there to develop as a character. I was at least, you know, making these, you know, little own personal decisions, and they, I had every poster. I would write their lyrics in every single notebook I had, you know, like I was so obsessed with them. I think I've seen them upwards of 10 times and I've only paid for 2 tickets just because people know I like them and they offer me to go to see them. I'm like, yeah, I guess.
I mean, that's why we're making this podcast. We're just trying to get free tickets to shows.
We're just trying to get free Fall Out Boy tickets. Pete Wentz, if you see this, please.
Please come on the show, but also we'd like free tickets.
Yeah. But yeah, that was it for me. I would love to hear what Joe's was.
Gosh, I think, well, you know, first of all, my parents were raised me on 70s soft rock. So Chicago bred, the occasional Aerosmith, but that was like when mom wasn't home. We had that LP and that was like an Aerosmith rocks.
I mean, that like 90s Aerosmith kind of hit that line, you know, like not the 70s cool guy Aerosmith.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I grew up like fascinated with the LP gatefold and like sitting by the stereo and staring at these things. But those are all my dad's records, you know? And then I think probably REM was the first band I remember hearing on the radio, liking myself and being like, I would like to know more about this. But I do know that the first album that I purchased with my money that was like for me was Semisonic's Closing Time. So that's my embarrassing first step there. Cause I mean, no disrespect to Semisonic, but I don't know that they hold up the same weight as an REM or a Queen or an Aerosmith or a Death Cab for Cutie. Or Fall Out Boy.
I mean, Death Cab like fits into the first like what I felt like was mine. It wasn't necessarily the first, like there were like Weezer was really that band that like I grew up on and like loved as like an eighth grader. But like everybody liked Weezer. Like that was all over the place. Like, so it was like Death Cab where I was like, I think I'm the only person listening to this, right? Like, and obviously I wasn't. Just kind of felt like that.
I actually just found out yesterday that Rivers Cuomo is Kurt Cobain, who faked his own death and became Rivers Cuomo. I found that out from Rivers Cuomo, who finally revealed that fact on a much more professional podcast with Rick Rubin. But he answered a bunch of questions about what it was like to write In Bloom songs and like what it was like to be Kurt Cobain, which
You heard it here second.
True. So Rivers, if you want to also come on this podcast, I don't really have any questions for you, but it seems like Oz might have some questions for you.
Yeah, I mean, like, why do you start sucking after 4 albums? But whatever.
I do. If there is a, it was also in seventh grade, somewhere on YouTube, if you can find the Silver Lake Middle School talent show, my friend and I danced to Pork and Beans. Like a full like choreographed dance. They were in a gorilla suit. I wasn't, mistake on my part because my face is in the video, but it is out there and it exists. And I think we came in third in the talent show. So it wasn't too bad.
That's a bronze.
Right. That's exactly.
Legit. it is funny though, because obviously we all know each other. We know that we have some connection to like punk and emo that like I feel like we all kind of subscribed to the music but then also subscribed to the lifestyle and looks and style choices of it, and it kind of like was a package for us, which I think is the interesting thing to kind of think about, because like, you know, you could go to a store and be like, I like this music now, here are the plaid pants with the straps that connect the legs so you can't walk in them that you can buy because I like this music. That wasn't a question. That was just an observation that we all had that. I didn't get a chance to have those plaid pants personally. I was not allowed.
Yeah, no, my dad, they would like hand me $20 and they'd be like, please don't go to Hot Topic or FYE or like anything else but these stores, like please. And I would come back with like my little bag stuffed under my sweatshirt so that they wouldn't know. And yeah, my dad for whatever reason, he was terrified of Hot Topic. Like, I'd like bring him in and he'd be like very shifty, very uncomfortable. I'm like, Dad, nothing's gonna happen. But just, yeah, that, you know, like middle-aged, like Irish Catholic dad was just like, what is going on in here?
I mean, Hot Topic is a terrifying place. I mean, all those t-shirts, so many t-shirts.
I think it was scarier like that, like 10 or 15 years ago. It is, or at least they've taken out all the Hot Topics around where I grew up, but it was not scary towards the end. It was a lot of like cartoons and like Cartoon Network stuff, and it looked all very nice. It was mostly the exterior that might have been intimidating.
Yeah, the creepy logo.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then you walked in and it was like an Adventure Time display, and I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Seems nice.
But there's something about that, you know, I think we all, I definitely love, I remember having to have a deep conversation with my parents about I don't even know how I acquired a Bad Religion t-shirt with the famous, you know, cross logo. I forget what they call that. But the line through the cross, and I was not allowed to wear that to school, and it was a whole big thing. And so, like, I think, what was it, 3 years ago, we were all at the Punk and Drublic festival together, and I bought a hoodie, and I was like, I'm an adult, I can have my own Bad Religion hoodie whenever I want. And then I like put it on, and I was like, oh, now I feel weird wearing this places where I'm like yelling at people about anti-religion. But yeah, it's fine.
I remember in high school at Newbury Comics, in the clearance $2 clothing bin, I found a I Hate Real Big Fish t-shirt that I would wear all the time. And then eventually I like wore it out and then made a I Hate Matt Ozalius t-shirt.
Wow.
Which people kind of loved and hated. And then like at Medford High, like where I went, like people would make like their own I Hate, like, you know, miscellaneous guy shirt and wear it themselves. And I'm like, I know I stole this from Real Big Fish, but I feel like you're really stepping on my style here.
So what I'm hearing is that that's going to be the merch shirt for this podcast.
Yeah.
Is that we're going to have
I don't like or listen to our Beer Your Life.
Mine was, I got a Dookie Green Day shirt, just like the album cover. And I brought it home, which again, I wasn't supposed to buy from Hot Topic in the first place. And my mom would just, what does that say? And I'm like, well, it's the name of the album. I had to return it. She marched me into Hot Topic, which was so mortifying
because
the register girl was the same girl that sold it to me. So I'm like, oh my God, like it's the worst day of my life. The mall Hot Topic girl isn't going to think I'm cool, which like that was like the peak of cool. Like, and yeah, I had to just mournfully return that t-shirt. I should buy it back now with my money.
But now it's a classic. It's I think it's now 27 years old or so.
Yeah.
Man, and I had that exact same experience with a record that I purchased that I was forced by my parents walking me into Newbury Comics and making return it, except the twist in it was that I insisted that this the CD that I had purchased new had the wrong disc in it. Cause I really wanted that Against All Authority CD. And I was like, I don't know, this is the CD that came in it. This is whatever. And the guy at Newbury Comics is like, I can't return this. This isn't that. And my parents are like, take it away from him. It had a, an iteration of that old Black Flag logo with the cop with his lips wrapped around a gun on the back of it. Against All Authority, Florida Ska Punk. So.
You guys need divorced parents. I was able to buy whatever CD or tape I wanted.
Yeah, well, as a kid, I thought I needed divorced parents too. That's definitely part of getting into punk rock, being like, you guys shouldn't be together anymore. You guys are arguing too much.
Do you guys remember the first, I don't know if this was as much a thing, but the first CD you burned, like, of your own mixes?
I mean, Anna, I'm old. I used to make mixtapes. We had these.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. Like, we got to, you know, make all sorts of mixtapes and hand them out to people, which was just its own thing. So I don't remember the first one. I made hundreds of them. MXR 90s were like currency for me in like eighth, ninth grade.
I know this well. You could also tape over tapes if you taped over the little corner of them too. So you could like turn.
And you could stop someone from taping over them by busting that little piece of plastic out. So you could be like, this is for you, girlfriend, and it's permanent.
I'm having a flashback memory now that you say that of not only making mixtapes, but I would sell them to people in middle school for the cost of the tape. And a friend's parents like called my parents and were like, this is piracy. Like he's stealing music from home and like selling it. And I was like, cool guys. Thank you for that.
Pitching on like an 8-year-old or 12-year-old.
What are we doing here? And taping stuff off the radio. I remember taping a radio headset off the radio too. That was a WBCN. Long lived. Not anymore, I guess. So not long lived, but they would
play moderate life.
Yeah.
So Anna, what's the go-to first song on your mix CD?
If I were to create one now, or the one that I like first burned in my prior years?
Let's jump to right now. What would you kick off an album with as your just go-to absolute banger to start anything?
To start anything?
I don't know. It depends on, I guess, who you're giving to for what for, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it has to start anything, it's probably Party Up by DMX. Because no matter what, something is starting. If this is the first song, we are beginning something. I would probably say, I actually think, so this was one of the things, I had started dating someone and I said, give me like a playlist of 10 songs and I'll make you one of 10 songs. And it has to be songs that like, either are like your go-tos or they, you know, explain something in your life. So let me pull mine up right now because I can give you the exact answer of what my first one was. This is a very important, I feel. This one was actually, it was Wild Night by Van Morrison was the first one that I wanted somebody to know about me. I really like Van Morrison a lot.
That's only because you've never met Van Morrison.
That's probably true. And unless he comes on this show, I don't know if I will get the opportunity. Is he hiding behind you, Joe, right now?
No, Van Morrison is not invited.
Does Van Morrison love craft beer? Or have we just not learned about this yet?
I mean, I don't know how he feels about craft beer. I know he's famously in love with his own genius. That's my understanding of Van Morrison. But I think he writes great songs, so I don't think he's wrong. He just knows it, you know? That is a great place to start. I mean, that's a good opener. When was that released? Is that a 70s track? Is that showing some appreciation for classics?
That is my dad's Magic 105.7 coming out of me.
And Oz, what would the answer to this question be for you?
If I was kicking off?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's.
I mean, you had to expect that we would toss the question back to you.
I was just going to try to move it along. I was going to ask another question. We're grilling a guest. I don't know. I'm not sure what I would kick off an album with.
Pass. I understand. Well, I think it's actually interesting to follow up your question a bit because, Anna, I've noticed you, if you don't mind me sharing this, you've been sharing playlists based off of colors and moods. And I'm really curious about that intersection of like what you're hearing and what you see. Going back to my youth, like sitting staring at double gatefolds, like I have like imprinted in me like Aerosmith is blue, because that's what Aerosmith rocks, was a big blue gatefold. Are you keying into the art, like the actual album art in these things, or is it more of a feeling that gives you space to say this is green, blue, red, etc.?
Yeah, it's definitely for me, and I think it also is sort of that, like when you have like an art, like when the artistic brain is like kind of kicking in, it helps again, like when we're doing like the Springdale Hazy labels, that certain songs just feel like they have a sort of like energy to them, and it's like, you know, like it's like the indigos for me, like if an emotion comes out and it's kind of pulling you down, it's a little bit sad, it's a little bit more you know, morose, it's to me that's indigo. And you know, and then you have these like, you know, like more like lusty, you got like Prince or something like that, that to me is like an ultraviolet, like that is just like bright, it's like, you know, like. And but you know, you have the songs that like, you know, you're almost sitting at your desk and you feel like you're like vibrating, you like have all this like pent up like aggression or anger, like that's crimson to me, you know. And so to me, like, and that's what I've always loved about music, is what I've loved about how, you know, like energy intersects with art. I think that there are so many ways that, you know, music is able to bring that out of you. And in my brain, it always does sort of translate more into, you know, like colors and imagery and stuff like that, whether or not the song is actually telling you that in any type of way. Even I think I have like Forest Green, which to me is, you know, music. I feel like I want to like wander off into the woods and never return, which is like a lot of Bon Iver, which I just feel like I could just disappear forever and never be heard from again. But yeah, just things like that, you feel like you get a certain energy from that song, and so those all live in those little playlists.
So have you designed a can that is a song you didn't pick?
That would be Joe's selection, which was Flame Carrier.
Okay.
Which was an Old Man Gloom song, which I think it was To Carry the Flame.
Yep, To Carry the Flame. That's true.
Yeah, so I had not picked that one. That was a Crimson playlist moment. That was some anger. but yeah, just listening to that song, I think that I translated that into, that can was a lot of sort of like molten grays and silvers. The undertones of the grays on that can all were sort of like orange underlays. Yeah, that's my baby.
yeah.
So, you know, like all, you know, like the grays of that, it's like an orange base in that, you know, in that ink. And then over that is the gray. So it has that sort of like, I'm thinking like molten stalagmites and lava and all this stuff. And, you know, through that song, I kind of felt this narrative of, you know, as he said, sort of like carrying this, you know, like flame up through the crust of the earth and through all the worms and decay and kind of like coming out on the other side and being able to translate that. I think this was the first beer of this series that we'd done, and I was so excited about it. I was really thrilled about how it turned out. I still really like it now. Yeah
me too, from both the beer and the well, obviously I picked that song, so I love that song, and I did feel a little bit bad. I think I saw you right after you had really immersed yourself by listening to that song over and over again for however long it took you to put yourself in that place. But I really thought that the connection was there in a really, really special way. But like for me, actually, I hear that song, you know, being really attuned to aggressive music, I always heard that as really uplifting and like pushing through all that stuff to come out on the other side. That's kind of what I heard. And it's interesting to think about it as just crushing and heavy and just big.
Yeah. It's crazy because the lyrics themselves, yeah. When I, you know, like I listened to it and listened to it and listened to it and then reading the lyrics and it's like, okay, like the subject of the self and of the song was, you know, like more leaning more positive. And so that's why I still also wanted it to look, you know, and tell a story of, you know, like keeping all these flames really bright and these oranges really bright, because it is this sort of like dark, heavy sound, but then tells this story that totally doesn't even follow that same thing. And I thought that was really interesting. And I'm glad that, and again, I think that's part of what makes this project cool, is I probably would have never listened to that song or stumbled across it in my own travels. But when we get to sit down and have all these conversations and share these collaborative playlists, like those discoveries come along. And I think that that's really cool.
Yeah, I really like the sharing of the playlist thing has been fun this year. It's always really interesting to see what everyone else is listening to and paying attention to and keying into. And it is going back to Oz said, tape trading days for us, I think, is like, that's kind of what used to happen. But there was so much like, you know, you had to like make a tape, and there's a whole thing that goes into that, especially if you're making it for somebody that you care about. As you mentioned, like trading a playlist with a loved one was that was like a serious endeavor. We found it in recently moving some of my mixed CDs for my then girlfriend, now wife, and there are some tunes.
Ex-girlfriend.
And my ex-girlfriend, not my wife, right? Yeah, but I really thought that she would like Less Than Jake more than she ended up liking Less Than Jake. We actually bonded initially over music as well, in that she had a photo of herself with the drummer for Big D and the Kids Table in her locker in high school.
Wow.
And I like Big D and the Kids Table and ska punk music. And, you know, being in a sport intense town, finding anybody that gave a shit about something that wasn't sports was always very, very exciting.
So to move this a little bit to the present, although I think I know the answer to this, Anna, you go to a show, what do you drink at said show?
It is a High Life. If they have it there, easily, every time, it has to be.
I felt like that was going to be the answer based on the Miller sign right over your shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I honestly do have a hard time sometimes. I feel like PBR is usually the way I have to go because I never see High Life in cans at shows. And I'm also not of the mind to like bring the bottle in. So yeah, I would say that High Life is absolutely like 9 times out of 10. If I can just like have my choice, it's just so beautiful.
Have you joined the ranks of us who pour spirits into their bottles of High Life?
Absolutely. I was at Brighton Bodega. Yeah. And I think we did it at Lulu's. I've done it at Brighton Bodega. Our waiter came up and he's like, oh, have you done this? And I'm like, bring it to me now. He's like, yes. But he didn't bring the lemon. The lemon to me is huge. Aperol, High Life, lemon sets it off.
All right. That's a good tip.
Yeah. I was like, didn't just bring the lemon now, please.
back in the days of playing music in a cramped 900 degree room, we used to put cucumber in High Life. We found it super refreshing.
Okay.
Why we were like slicing cucumber in a practice space, don't ask, but
sounds very elegant.
It does. I always think when we were talking with that question, Oz, and I don't think it's my go-to personally, but like I, for some reason, just always think about Great Scott, and I think about Old Brown Dog, because it was just like always on tap there, and it was always one of the things that I drank when I was there. Like I would normally just hit the PBR or the lager, but one Old Brown Dog, and I you know, distinctly remember it being a cash bar and being poor and being like, all right, I have like $12. That means I can have an Old Brown Dog and one shitty lager. Like that's tonight, so.
I definitely have done the same, like where I'll like go to a place and I'll be like, I want one decent beer to start the night. And then I will drink, you know, I'm a Coors Banquet. So they got little banquet stubbies. I'll drink those. Otherwise, that's it. But, you know, like they had, you know, Winter Hill and True North recently at O'Brien's back when I was able to go there. And like, and O'Brien's has always had Allagash White and they've never cleaned the lines. So if you need a beer that still tastes good if you don't clean a line, apparently Allagash White is that one. You can't overpower that beer. That beer is just still delicious no matter what. And if you know Daryl, he'll apparently pour it to you in a pint glass instead of one of the little tulips that they want to give you, so, which I appreciate.
Can we design our post-pandemic ideal live show? Is that, I mean, we didn't talk about doing this, but I think I would like to hear your thoughts on what is important in a good live show and how many bands. Oz, have you ever played a show with more than 5 bands?
Oh yeah, I played all day festivals at what's the place in Cambridge, the Elks Lodge?
Yeah. Me too. And as an old person now, I'm like, 4 bands is as many bands as I can see. And that's the perfect amount of bands.
As I'll just answer it as like right off the bat, the first show I want to go to when pandemic is over is just going to be at O'Brien's. I want like Choke Up, Hallelujah the Hills. If Luau feels like getting back together and, you know, I don't know. There's so many like local bands I like that have broke up. So I trying to remember who hasn't broken up. You know what? Three band build. Now we'll throw Rebuilder on there. Let's go. Rebuilder can play this show. And just, I want to go and just drink so many beers to a venue I can ride my bike to. And just like, I want to see a show with like 30 people in this tiny room where I'm not worried. All of them will be my friends because I know like everyone in there, and it would be amazing. That's what I want. That's like, you know, bands will come eventually, but I just want a little show with all my friends.
That sounds lovely. I would say one of the shows that I want to go to was actually thinking about seeing your band, Cato Kalin, now Pool House, at Charlie's Upstairs. Charlie's Upstairs is a oppressively small, terrible place to see a show, but for those reasons, also a great place to see a show. Just a strange part of a restaurant converted to a punk rock show on a Monday night. That sounds
where cool. Else can you see a punk show and drink a Chimay Blue?
Few places
on draft
and $5 hamburger as well. So
yeah,
maybe less than $5.
It might be considered a hamburger.
I think I've had the delight of seeing Oz perform at this very location.
It's it is the place to go for that. I think it's a great venue. I mean, I would probably not to besmirch O'Brien's. Great Scott always lives in my mind as this lovely place, and Great Scott, I guess we'll be returning, but in different form. But it won't be that corner on Comm Ave that it used to be. That's
strange. It'll be the other corner.
Yeah.
Three Regina's.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Anna? What are you thinking?
So one of the things that I've missed the most about going to shows, I really liked, you know, like sometimes going to a little bit more aggressive shows and just kind of being able to get like a lot out, like always just feeling like really good after going. So I actually saw Knocked Loose at the Met in Pawtucket, I believe, in 2019, and had such a good time there. Ran into Josh Kane there. Shout out to Jack's Abbey sales team. But I had such an incredible time at that show, and I have been dying to see them again since that day. So I would love to get out and go see them again. I think they played a Halloween show in Mass in maybe 2019 again that I missed and I was very upset about. But yeah, I would love to go and see them again.
They are part of this like revival of young bands playing what I like recognize as like old school metalcore, but like if I were to hear that without knowing who they are, I'd be like, these guys are from 30 years ago. But then I see them and I'm like, no, these guys are like not even 30.
Yeah.
And it is so pleasant. They have some of the best motherfuckers on their songs, like where they just like they just draw that word out perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem like they're a fun time. Was it a very active pit situation?
It was. The only thing is that, the, you know, like right in front of the stage, there are these two, you know, like support beam poles that you cannot, you know, obviously these are like load bearing poles, but you have to be aware of them at all times because you will quickly catch one to the face. But it's one of those
just
great.
Hang on, they can support you.
It is one of those great venues that, you know, like it's not like there's any separation between. I mean, really, it's like, you know, the stage is a foot, you know, off the actual ground that you're standing on, you know, so it doesn't feel, you know, it feels like a smaller space than it is. They also have like a great outdoor space that you can like get in and out of really quick. Yeah, I loved seeing them there. It just felt like there was like no real separation because I also saw them at the Palladium, which obviously you got the barricade and then the stage in front of you. So it was cool to see them there. And it felt like a very different experience that time.
I in my part of our house here have a pennant from a show I went to a couple years ago with our colleague Jordan. which was Converge and Infest at the Elks Lodge in Cambridge, aka Hardcore Stadium. And that was like I see Oz shaking your head. I'd love to hear your shaking head story here, but just the fact that it was like you're saying, you're like, it's like this little tiny hall that's not, they're not advertising anything. It's just like been rented out for this show. There's a weird basement bar with $3 beers. And it's just like taking over a weird space for a night like that, that kind of DIY attitude. I'm hoping that venues obviously bounce back from this, but I'm also hoping that we get that DIY ethos back, and we can be putting on house shows and weird basement shows and Elks Lodge shows.
It's crazy too, because I feel like so many people have blown up in the course of quarantine. And that's also, you know, one of those reasons that I was really excited to have seen Knocked Loose in a smaller setting where we were, you know, still able to get so close. Cause as these people reach this meteoric, you know, state, you don't get those shows anymore. Cause I remember Oz saying he almost saw Lizzo for $30, I think, somewhere. or I forget exactly how that story
Lizzo
went,
played but... like the Paradise before she blew up. And we were like, I forget why we couldn't go, but
yeah, the Paradise is a great place to catch those people who are right in the cusp. That's for sure. I missed seeing Killer Mike there right before Run the Jewels came out. I say missed because I had a ticket to the Big Boy show he was opening for, and it got rescheduled to a weekday, and I was like, oh, weeknight. yeah, that was dumb.
I had one question, because I did some homework on your sit down with the Macrotones, who also brought a Pilsner, so I'm sorry for bringing two Pilsners in a row to these episodes. But I thought it was interesting, Joe. I think you'd asked about like getting, I think they're a 10-piece band, and getting 10 different perspectives on one song. And it just struck me as funny, because I feel like that's literally every single day at the brewery and what we do. and so I just kind of wanted to ask you guys, you know, about like the sort of like collaborative spirit of beer, and how, you know, like all these different, you know, perspectives and stuff like that sort of do come together to create what we do and what we have, from, you know, the beer itself to the packaging to everything like that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I guess my initial thought is that's kind of where the rubber meets the road for what is great about what we do, which is just like the time you can spend with somebody drinking a beer, which is like time we're literally spending right now. Like you can talk about that next move and talk about what the project is and talk about what you intend and what you're trying to express. And I think that can be like, it can be a hard thing to like focus in on sometimes. You can be like, you know, trying to corral everyone's vision down to that center point where you want to live. But I think that's kind of half the fun of it, is getting everyone's perspective and getting everyone's say in it. And and trusting your collaborators to bring a piece of themselves to it, and also trusting yourself not to be like too controlling over what the end product is. Like, just because you have a vision for one thing, if you really want to collaborate with someone, you got to like let that vision be incomplete, and you're going to let them complete it. What do you think, Oz?
I mean, I think, you know, I'll go for like when you're playing music, like, I've never been the type of person that comes in and I'm like, this is my song, this is the way it sounds, this is how it's going to be. Like, collaboration is like getting new ears on anything, new eyes on anything is so important, because you might have missed something that makes it better. Like, someone might point out something and you're like, I don't like that, but at least you're thinking about whether you like it or not, like finding new voices for stuff, finding new ways of looking at stuff, whether you like that or not, is always important. You've got to always figure out how the end product is going to come out. And there has to be a push and a pull as it gets to the finish line.
Yeah, I think you set yourself up by having the right collaborators, you know, like, and that's what I think. If you're in a band like the Macrotones with 10 people in it, you got to have the right mentality, the right collaborators, and the right people in the room. And I think as a business, we kind of operate the same way, right? Like we got to know I might have a really specific vision for something, but I got to walk in and say, like, here's how far I've gotten with it, and like actually trust people and be respectful of what they bring, and like try to see a new piece of something.
The Macrotones guy isn't coming with like metal riffs to be like, this is going to be our next song, guys. He knows at least his limitations of where stuff should fit in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he put a dub record out last year. It was Flying Vipers, and it's a lot of the same guys as is in the Microtones, but Macrotones.
We're going to form a new band.
Yeah, but that's an interesting, I mean, you must deal with this from a visual perspective too on your team, Anna, when it comes to like coming up with both like taking what we sometimes bring you with the beer and saying, okay, this is what it should look like, and taking your team and kind of collaborating together, right? And there has to be an element of that that goes with that.
Definitely. And I think, you know, especially visually, I think that a lot of people do come with a lot of ideas, you know, because I think that whether or not people believe that they are creative, I think that they are. And it's, you know, whether it's like vague gesticulating or like, you know, actually, you know, like, I have this idea, could we try and execute something like this? I think that you are trying to pull from different things that, you know, ultimately you want these people to see something in themselves in the final product, because what you guys put together in the beer, and Oz, I even felt this way about like the Co-Pilot project, you know, like everybody's putting in their own ideas. You're putting in all this work and effort. You want, you know, its little outfit to now communicate the hard work, and, you know, you want it to communicate the same story. You want it to communicate the flavors and what you're going to get in this can. And, you know, you don't want all the hard work to, you know, stop short at, you know, like somebody looks at it on the shelf and they're like, so it's taking all of that, which I think is all this creative input in its own right. And then taking that and putting it to the final step of somebody has to just look at this on a shelf and judge it at its face value. It's like, please pick us. But that's what I've always loved, is that I think that everybody here really does have so much creative merit and so many good ideas and are so intelligent at what their, you know, niches within the, or, you know, like their little gear in the system, that getting to work with people and getting to sort of like fit into that process is really neat, because I love being able to then put a physical picture to what we've all created. And then we send our kids out in the world and they grow.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of anthropomorphizing I'm hearing from you, in that you are calling these your children, not this.
Always.
It's someone else's child. But what it's wearing is its outfit.
Yep.
Yeah. But, you know, I think the visual side of things makes me think about like something you just said, which is like the creative process that is involved in what we all do. And sometimes it's easy to forget that you have that type of thinking at your fingertips, at your disposal, and then have to stop and be like, you know, like, you don't have to be. Like, I'm not a visual artist, but I grew up playing music, and fairly recently realized, like, I don't have to be, like, a great musician to play music. Like, I can just play music. Like, that's a way that I can express myself. So I should do that. And that has been that's been freeing for me as a human being who hasn't accessed that part of my brain for a while. But I think it's spending time with you guys and seeing the creative process and reminding me, like, oh, I understand the mechanics of this process, but in a different language than is being spoken here. And I forgot about that language.
So to stray away from that slightly, Anna, then, who's your favorite non-child? What's your favorite beer label that you don't make? You see a can on that shelf. Whose graphic design is really nailing it?
My God. I mean, I will say that, and I can't even pick from them all. I love, and Joe dropped some off for me, and witnesses can attest that I've said that Zero Gravity, I think, is one of my favorites. I know they're not, they've taken this very like minimalist, very like simple approach, I think, in the past couple of years. But to me, doing minimal is hard. it's hard to make it look really good with not a lot on the can to like distract from anything. You know what I mean?
Joe just dropped off that Black Cat Porter to me, and it looks like a wanted poster. Like, it just looks like Black Cat wanted poster.
What do you think he did? The crime of being too cute?
maybe.
Yeah, but I have the past couple of years, Zero Gravity Adventure Pants was really cute to me, with like the little world, and he's just like, cute gets to me, and I wish it didn't, but it does. But it's not just cute. I think it's interesting. And yeah, Zero Gravity, I think, is up there for me as just always being like really polished, really well done. I love, you know, when I'm looking at them on the shelf, they just look so sick together. So I would definitely have Zero Gravity very, very high up there. Also, Allagash for me is kind of like another standard I set myself to of like, that's good. But I'd love to know, just, I don't know what you guys' favorite cans are.
Well, yeah, I'm going to do the same thing. I'm with you in the Black Cat. What I like about Zero Gravity is that their beers, they let each of their beers have its own personality. And they kind of just lean into that. So instead of like worrying about having like a strong brand architecture across them, they just have like a feel that you can get from each of them individually. But like the feel is so, you know, unique to that specific brand, which is different than like an Allagash, which is a little bit more like regimented and they have like boxes that they hit, but they do a great job within that. I would actually like, one of the reasons I gave you guys some bottles is that like, for me, I kind of like love a bottle of beer still. I think, I don't know if I can really say that Bell's is design-wise where I come at it, because I think that some of their designs just don't speak to me as specifically, but the beer that was mentioned by Macrotones, Tannenzapfle, which is a bottle, is one of my favorite all around designs of a single product of any kind. It's just from the fact that the bottle is supposed to look like a pine cone that grows where this comes from, and the fact that the logo is the pine cone upside down because the pine cone grows up. So when they talk about the logo, it's like it grows up. So when you flip the bottle and you're drinking it, it's pointed the right way. That's the right way for it to go. And I did like all of that. I was like, this, yes.
So, yeah.
The Idle Hands logo that has like the hands that make the beer. Like I always like really was like a sap for that logo, just looking good.
That blew your mind.
It blew my mind. I was just like, I like this. I just like it. Just liked it.
And I'm pouring into a Tulip, a De La Seine Tulip, which they make lovely bottles of Belgian beer that are very iconoclastic and strange and different, and they have
their labels are awesome.
Yeah, they use like this like faux Marxist kind of like it looks like propaganda, you know, and they just do a great job of communicating that between them and then this other brewery, Dodola, the Mad Brewers of Belgium. Those are my two favorite overseas brewers, I think.
That's, I will say, I should honorable mention the friends at Oxbow, just because if there's one thing I love like black and white and then like an accent color. My like college work was a lot like that. I just worked in black and white and then always had the one accent color. Their bottle labels just always following, you know, like more, you know, typography play and all that, like everything that they can do with three or four colors, it's usually like the black, white, blue, and red. I love it. And everything that comes out, I'm like, woo. You know? And I it's just so fun to get excited.
You make a little owl noise, is that what you're saying?
Yes, I turn into an owl and then I fly away with a barrel. That's me on their can. But yeah, I that's definitely an honorable mention for me. Not that I'm just like looking at the beers that I have in front of me, but I really do shop based on labels a lot, which I don't want to say that I don't look at name, but if a label really suckers me in, I'm like, all right, I'll try it.
I'm a sucker for like 8-bit Nintendo looking stuff. So like if anything has that, I like always buy one, and it's so lame of me, but
yeah, but that can be cute. It can be done well.
Mm-hmm.
That's like speaking to some primal version of yourself and like poking that when brands do that, which is yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you do that? I guess I think what's interesting is that like the you start to talk about zero gravity and Oxbow and what the labels do to you. If you were to just read what the beers are, I had the same response. I picked up, you were kind enough to give me that surf melon beer, and I was like, farmhouse watermelon salt and lime, like boom, like ooh.
Yeah,
like it didn't really matter to me what it looked like, and then I already had the can, obviously, and then I was also like, this looks really interesting.
It was very interesting. I had picked it up sounding similar to the Marg Sour that we'd done. And then I think that I'd seen it on their Instagram and I was like, that looks good. But it had never like crossed my little pathway before. And then I saw it and I had to snatch it up.
I always find it interesting on the Oxbow labels. They always hammer home like production time. Like there's Lupulo Pils, production time, 6 weeks. Like,
yeah.
Let you know how much time goes into their beer at all. You like their sour bottles are like production time 18 months. Like they want you to know how long it took to make this beer. And I like kind of appreciate that as obviously like, you know, someone who works for a lager producing brewery, like beers take time. I appreciate that they're like throwing that out there.
Yeah.
We're just like, we decocted it.
Yeah, we don't know.
Look it up.
Please don't ask us what that means.
This Black Cat Porter is fantastic, so.
It is very good.
Yeah, so this was me thinking about drinking a good dark beer at a show as something that I mentioned enjoying. And yeah, I can't wait to do that again. It's going to be great. I think that the we were talking about creative process and beer and labels, but I'm curious, when you don't have the option of a label and you're like looking at a draft menu, for example, let's imagine that world out there where there's no, just imagine a place where there's just stuff available on draft. How do you guys go about, you know, making a decision? Is it based on, you know, style first? Is it brand first? Do you feel compelled by the name of the beer?
I mean, I know for me, like I'm usually in the mood for a type of beer. So, you know, my place that I go to the most is probably Ritzy East. So like if I show up at Ritzy East and I like want a dark beer, 9 times out of 10, I will order the dark beer. But like, you know, sometimes they just have Guinness and then I'll have to do an audible. Hopefully they have like a brown or something close. But like, for me, it's all about style, like what I'm in the mood for. I feel like having a certain style, that's what I'll go towards that, as long as that brand isn't crap, which I'm not saying Guinness is crap, but I'm usually not in the mood for Guinness. Sweet stouts just are, they're different from like a different style of stout. That sounded really negative towards Guinness. It wasn't supposed to. Don't kill me, every Irish person.
My friend Mike is a brand ambassador for Guinness. Well, apologies to you, Mike.
Plug a Guinness ad right here.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I feel similarly about Guinness in as much as it does meet a need for me, and the need is the morning at Phoenix Landing in Cambridge to watch the Liverpool game. We were like, what's responsible to drink at 8:30 in the morning? And
Guinness, that's perfect. That's when I would drink it.
Yeah, it's a great, I mean, it makes you feel good in the morning. yeah, I'm with you on style. How do you feel about it, Anna? Do you start with style?
I'm small, so I have to start with ABV, because if I go too hard in the beginning, it does not ever. So I always just look for like what's like low and tiny, because I'm hoping that it's like, if I do like it, you know, like hopefully I'll be able to enjoy it more throughout the evening. You know, like if I'm seeing that it's like, you know, anywhere between like 5 and then topping out at probably like 6.5 is good for me. 6.5 is probably, I'm probably overestimating myself. I should probably say like a nice 5.2. But yeah, as long as I can, if it's something that I can, you know, just pace myself with through the night, is unfortunately the stage in my life that I am at right now of just like tiny and light.
I don't think that's unfortunate. I think it's just something we all learned about ourselves.
Yeah, and it is exciting that it's like there's so many more beer styles out there than I thought were initially available. I thought sours were always going to be like the tart flavors would always be like higher ABV, like that kind of thing. And then the more I've learned, obviously being here and learning throughout my career here, getting into like the like smaller, you know, like kettle sours and stuff like that, learning that all these things are out there and you know, this, that there's a far more variety in even in the small guys that is out there to play with. But yeah, I definitely, unfortunately, am always looking at the ABV.
I guess it's fair to warn you that I gave you a bottle of a 10% like double IPA today. So that's an at home.
Oh, did you get a hop slam?
I did.
Pass a hop slam.
Split that with Jake.
You'll just see me floating over the roofs of Brighton at like 3 a.m. Yeah. My soul projecting.
What will either of you put out into the world as an artist or a record that people should be paying attention to right now?
I mean, how recent do we have to get this record?
No, just whatever you feel like is not as widely appreciated as it should be.
I mean, I've made it very known that last Iron Sheik full length was just amazing. And, so it's a record about a guy who he was in a band with who passed away, as well as his wife divorcing him. So like, it's a sweet twofer record of depression. And
what's that record called?
It is called You Can't Stay Here. So Iron Sheik is a band from the Latterman family. So a bunch of punk, you know, records from New Jersey, a particular guy who played guitar for them, but so different lead singer. Iron Sheik's You Can't Stay Here it's like full of like really amazing songs, but they are super depressing. And, you know, all three of us on this call here have recently lost a very good friend of ours. And it's a record that I have listened to and cried a lot and drank a lot of beer to. It's a record that like me and Andy Grant just sat and drank beers and listened to via Zoom to just be in the same place because we were super sad, and it's amazing. I would say any beer works, the stronger the better. Drink a Bell's Hop Slam while listening to Iron Sheik's You Can't Stay Here. If you are really just, it's a record that is sad, but it makes me feel good because it's so amazing. So that's my pick right there. And I threw a beer in there, which is part of this podcast. So I feel like that should be.
Yep, on brand. All right, Annie Keeney.
All right. So whenever I get the chance, I always say Stan Carly Rae Jepsen, but I will give one other actual music recommendation.
Wrong with Carly Rae Jepsen? Huh? Nothing wrong with Carly Rae Jepsen. You don't have to hedge a bad here.
If I can say one thing, it's Carly Rae Jepsen. If I have the time to say two things, it is Just Friends, who Oz and I saw, I believe, at the Once Ballroom in Somerville.
We certainly did.
I think that they're a lot of fun. They're super high energy, similar to what you guys had said about the Macrotones. When Oz and I saw them live, I think they came out as four, and then like more people with more instruments just kept coming on stage, and we're like, how many people are in this band? I think they got up to about like nearly 12. Horns, high energy. Ultimately like really positive, just like a good group of friends that got together and really like making music, and I adore them, and their lead singer always reminded me of that same friend that we all lost, and just so high energy and so lovable and so energetic, could just like draw all the energy in the room. You will have a great time if you see them, you will have a great time if you listen to them. I really like them. I recommend not Hop Slam because I will be on the floor. But I can't wait to try it out on Joe's recommendation.
Joe, take us home. What do you got?
I realized as I asked it that I didn't have an answer to it. So I've been frantically thinking, like, wait a minute. I think for most recently, what has moved me is the most recent Viagra Boys record, which I think is called Welfare Jazz, and is just kind of like dirty rock and roll with like saxophones and songs about devices to smuggle toads places, and a great John Prine cover that is totally weird and twisted that I think you should hear. And they're like a Swedish band, I guess. And they just have like that kind of rock and roll energy that I really kind of tap into. And it really like, especially when you see what they're doing. And like, sometimes I think when I heard the record, I didn't appreciate how like in the cut the grooves were and like how direct and to the point and how long they could ride them and bring people with them. And they're just also just kind of absurd. So I think like a West Coast IPA type situation, like old school, but like still exciting. Maybe a Bell, not the Hop Slam, because Hop Slam is kind of crazy. Two Hearted from Bells is your maybe the pairing there, but I think Viagra Boys ain't nice. But I guess if we have to go Swedish beer, Omnipolo, you know, just to make it all work.
Couple of yellow bellies.
Yeah, a couple of yellow bellies to put you there. But yeah, Viagra Boys, Welfare Jazz is good. Well, I'm gonna toast y'all. We're gonna toast together.
Toast.
We're there. Dark beer together.
Anna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was so good to see you guys and talk to you guys and see your faces.
Cheers.
Ding!